This is the Tax Update Podcast for Saturday, March 25th, 2006. This week we take a look at the Cohen Rule, its application, use, and abuse. Tax Update Podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and the document related to the podcast may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file. Such prohibited use would include using the podcast or document as part of a CPE presentation for which a fee is charged. This podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Lineberg Information Services has also begun a couple of other podcasts recently that they archive on their site. So, again, check out www.lineberg-services.com for information on subscribing to their services. This week, we're going to deal with the little problem we all tend to have with clients whose records turned out to be less than perfect, or shall we say, very far from perfect. And we deal with the issue of what do you do about the imperfect records, and the case that we keep coming back to in the issue about imperfection of records, the case of George M. Cohen from the early part of the last century. Now, the Cohen case is one that I think we've all heard about, everybody discusses, and actually gets raised quite often in court opinions these days. We hear lots of discussions about the Cohen rule or the use of the Cohen rule to estimate expenses. What we'll take a look at is, the issue is, where do we end up to this problem about records? Well, the basic rule for keeping records is actually set forth in the code. The Internal Revenue Code requires that taxpayers keep adequate records. Internal Revenue Code Section 6001 provides, every person liable for any tax imposed by this title or for the collection thereof shall keep such records, render such statements, make such return, and comply with such rules and regulations as the Secretary may from time to time prescribe. Whenever, in the judgment of the Secretary, is necessary, he may require any person by notice served upon such person by regulations to make such return, render statements, or keep such records as the Secretary may deem sufficient to show whether or not such person is liable for this tax under this title. Now, basically, we get into this and we get into Regulation 1.6001-1, Records, that tells us some of the details of what we shall have as records. Under A, we're told that basically, except as provided in B, which is an exception we'll discuss here in a second, any person subject to tax under subtitle A of the code, or any person required to file a return of information with respect to income, shall keep permanent books of accounts or records, including inventories, as are sufficient to establish the amount of gross income, deductions, credits, or other matters required to be shown by such person in any return of such tax or information. Now, there is an exception in B, for farmers and wage earners. Individuals deriving gross income from the business of farming, an individual whose gross income includes salaries, wages, or similar compensation for personal services rendered, are required with respect to such income to keep such records as will enable the district director to determine the correct amount of income subject to tax. It is not necessary, however, that with respect to such income, individuals keep the books of accounts required by paragraph A. Now, essentially, this appears to give us an exception for wage earners and farmers that they can somehow get by with less books. In reality, the courts have not seen a huge distinction here as to what's allowable. We basically, therefore, have a code provision that requires us and regulations that require us to keep adequate books and records. Well, now, the obvious question that comes to mind whenever you deal with a provision like this in the law that tells you you must do A is, what happens if I don't? That was the issue before the Second Circuit many, many years ago in the Cohen case. The Cohen case involved entertainer George M. Cohen, the Yankee Doodle Dandy guy, vaudeville entertainer. He was well known. He also kept horrible records. That was no question. The year in question is his income for the year 1919. And in fact, the major issue in this case was dealing with other matters or items of income, basically, the Cohen rule comes down to basically a one-paragraph section of this, where the Second Circuit reversed the Board of Tax Appeals. The Board of Tax Appeals is the predecessor, effectively, to the tax court of today. And it reversed the Board of Tax Appeals on what it meant in the predecessor section to 6001, predecessor by a couple of revisions of the code, what it meant if you didn't keep the records, the so what. And the Board of Tax Appeals had decided that the so what was, if you don't keep records of your deductions, you don't get the deduction. The Second Circuit, however, modified that after looking over the case. The Second Circuit, in what was the key paragraph we're going to discuss here in their opinion, found the following things. In the production of his plays, Cohen was obligated to be free-handed in entertaining actors, employees, and, as he naively adds, dramatic critics. He had to travel much, at times, with his attorney. These expenses amounted to substantial sums, but he kept no account and probably could not have done so. I find that to be an interesting statement on the back end, but that's okay. Court agrees that he could not have kept the records. This will become important as we discuss how the Cohen rule works. At the trial before the board, he estimated he had spent $11,000 in this fashion during the first 6 months of 1921, $22,000 between July 1st, 1921, and June 30th, 1922, and as much for any following fiscal year, $55,000 in all. Now, this is Mr. Cohen's estimation of the expenses he has paid. The board refused to allow him any part of this on the ground that it was impossible to tell how much he had in fact spent in the absence of any items or details. Now the court goes on to its key finding and what becomes the Cohen rule. The question is how far this refusal is justified in view of the finding that he had spent much, the court conceded that, and that the sums were allowable expenses. The Board of Tax Appeals had also conceded that point. We find that you have spent large sums. We find that these sums are probably deductible, or deductible, would be deductible expenses. Is the court justified in saying, but because you didn't keep records, your allowable amount is zero? Under 6001, and this is key because it's not true everywhere else now. Congress has modified this rule in certain areas. But under 6001, the Second Circuit would hold under that type of a code provision, the refusal is not justified. Absolute certainty in such matters is usually impossible and is not necessary, the court found. The board should make as close an approximation as it can. Therefore, the court is required to approximate once it has found the expenses were there. Now, it can say, bearing heavily if it chooses upon the taxpayer whose inaptitude is of his own making. So the court indicates, if the fact we don't have records is because of the taxpayer, you do consider that and work that against the taxpayer. But to allow nothing at all, the court goes on, appears to us inconsistent with saying that something was spent. Now the court's going to what it says is the issue of law here, and this is important to understand. We have an issue. The factual base was established here as a factual matter. It was decided he had spent funds. It was decided those funds were deductible. The court had decided, but because he didn't have records, as a matter of law, no deduction would be allowed. The Second Circuit is now saying, no, as a matter of law, having found the first two, you now are in a position you must estimate and reasonably estimate the amount. The Second Circuit goes on to say, true, we do not know how many trips Cohen made, nor how large his entertainments were. Yet there was obvious some basis for computation, if necessary, by drawing upon the board's personal estimates of the minimum of such expenses. The amount may be trivial and unsatisfactory, but there was basis for some allowance, and it was wrong to refuse any, even though it were the traveling expenses of a single trip. Key caveat here, Congress does not like that sentence. That sentence has been struck on the basis for that type of expense, but we'll go on. It is not fatal that the result will inevitably be speculative. Many important decisions must be such, so the mere fact we can't know the exact number is not a problem. We think that the board was in error as to this and must reconsider the evidence. That paragraph forms the Cohen rule. So where do we go from the Cohen rule? Well, the basic issue with the Cohen rule deals with the fact that clients sometimes don't have all the records that they should. But if you can establish that the expense was expended, that it appears there is evidence to believe the expense was expended, and if you can establish some method for arriving at a reasonable estimate, understanding that if the reason we don't have records is because the taxpayer managed to just not keep them or was just ignored the issue, that will bear against them, the court nevertheless can and should allow a deduction for the expenses. Now, a couple of key caveats we have here. Congress has specifically removed the Cohen rule from a few areas. One important one is the very type of expenses that George M. Cohen won on in this case that became the Cohen rule. Those are entertainment expenses and other expenses covered by 274D. A taxpayer who does not have the necessary documentation for entertainment or for auto travel or for various other similar items that involve listed property, for instance, cellular telephones of all things, does not get the deduction even if we allow that the person must have spent money on those items and that the person would get a deduction for them. You know, they're reasonable, necessary expenses and are truly deductible. The deduction is disallowed by Section 274D unless there is adequate records. Section 170 on charitable contributions imposes similar restrictions. It tells us that for certain charitable contributions, either we have the information or we have the proper backup, we have the proper receipts and the proper documentation, or the deduction is disallowed. A leading case in that area was the case of John Hewitt, who discovered that even though his stock, the court had essentially found that he had properly valued the stock he gave, which happened to be Jackson Hewitt stock, and that the value was reasonable, made sense, the mere fact that it was not publicly traded stock and there was no appraisal was fatal to the claimed amount of his deduction. Congress has struck the Cohen rule in certain cases. But if the Cohen rule is not struck, nevertheless, you still have some issues involved. You will find that in a lot of court cases you read, the court will tell you, as it will in the case we'll consider next, that the record simply is not adequate to make a Cohen-style estimate of the expenses that would be allowed to be estimated. The court has held there must be a reasonable basis for coming up with the amount that is estimated under the Cohen rule. You can't just wildly throw darts. If that is what's happening, then there is not enough information to run the Cohen rule down. In this case, Vanasek versus Commissioner, 85 TC 731, deals with that very issue about the fact that there must be some basis for the decision to be made. Now, we're going to discuss the fact that, therefore, a taxpayer cannot simply walk in and say, well, I should have had expenses, I'm a truck driver, or I'm a cabbie, or I'm a CPA, and so I've clearly should have had these expenses, but I'm going to give no evidence whatsoever what they should be. I just want you to give me X dollars. That doesn't work. There has to be a basis upon which to do it. Now let's talk about the practical application of Cohen. I see Cohen as a practical matter involving what you might call a catch-22 situation. If you remember the old novel Catch-22, there was this little problem that the lead character in the novel was trying to get basically out of having to fly more bombing missions. This was in World War II. And he wanted to get out of it because, quite frankly, he was afraid for his life. Probably not an unreasonable position, considering the issue. So he went forth, though, and discovered what could he do to get out of that. And he was told, well, if you were crazy, we'd let you out. And he said, I'm crazy. You know, I've got it. I will go ahead. So as soon as I'm crazy. So he says, well, there's this other pilot who clearly is crazy. Now, you know, would he be eligible for dismissal? And he is told about the Catch-22 rule. He is told, yes, that pilot could be dismissed. Asked, why haven't you dismissed him? Because he hasn't asked to be dismissed. So if he asked to be dismissed, you dismiss him. They went on. He said, no. If he asked to be dismissed, that would indicate he was in fear of his life, which indicates rational thought, which therefore indicates he's not crazy, therefore he can't be dismissed. So essentially, we have the catch-22. Cohen presents an interesting kind of parallel. The Cohen rule essentially can be used, best used by a client who doesn't know about the Cohen rule. That is, if it appears you are trying to make use of it, or if it appears it is a planning tool, it probably doesn't work. The courts need a basis, and we strongly look at the issue of whether the inexactitude is of the taxpayer's own making. As well, Cohen works best when it clearly was a situation where the taxpayer could not have been able to keep the records. Obvious example from this past year would involve many taxpayers in the New Orleans area. Those taxpayers may have lost records, and frankly, it was through no fault of their own. In that case, you have a perfect Cohen case, but you can't stop there. With the Cohen, you still must go back and develop other information to the extent possible to support the income deduction items you're going to be reporting. If a taxpayer tries to make use of Cohen going forward, then we have a problem. So I think as practitioners, we have to look at Cohen primarily as damage control. It is a case where things have gone wrong. It is after the fact. The records cannot be gotten. And at this point, we're trying to work with Cohen. I would tell a client, if I used Cohen because the individual, let's say out of sheer ignorance, failed to keep the records, or just didn't know, whatever reason, but clearly it doesn't look good, say, well, I think Cohen might work this time, but now that you know about the problem, next year it isn't going to work. Cohen is not going to help you at that point. And remember that Cohen still won't help you if you don't have some reasonable basis for coming up with your income numbers. Now that gets us to the case which came down this past week, a tax court summary case that actually discusses Cohen in the context of a number of different expenses. This was the case of Butler versus Commissioner. The Butler case deals primarily with Cohen issues because the problem we had was the taxpayers were trying to take medical expenses on Schedule A, Schedule C business expenses, and Schedule E rental type expenses for which they didn't have adequate documentation. Now, what the court found was in each case that the person would come up, they came up, they explained, well, they didn't have the records, but they had estimated. And the court continues to point out that unfortunately, without a factual basis on which to base this number, while we may honestly believe they have incurred expenses of some sort, we have no basis whatsoever for coming up with our estimate of expenses. In most cases, they disallowed the taxpayers' amounts entirely based upon the idea that there was nothing that could easily show what was there, or the amounts they did allow were so small as to not make a difference. In some cases, would not get them over the amount they needed to itemize. It is important to take a look at the Butler case and give it as an example of how Cohen does not work. And Cohen does not give you the right to go in and just estimate what you need to. It is also important to note, as explained in this case, that when we get to 274D, you cannot use Cohen. That is clearly blocked by the code. If a taxpayer does not have the records to support entertainment or travel, there is no deduction allowed in front of the court. The court cannot estimate. The court can even agree that they had to have had that auto mileage. They had to have had the entertainment. It just, you know, is required in the business. But if it's not documented, the court cannot allow it if there's not adequate documentation. Now, I should point out the regulations don't necessarily require logs for the case of these things, or require some of these things exactly documented in a specific form. But basically, there needs to be adequate enough to establish all of the details required by the regulation. That means you're going to have some real work trying to get reconstruction up to a point where it's going to be adequate under these rules. Cohen is, as I say, crucial, and now that we're getting to the end of the tax season, unfortunately, people who tend to come in later in tax season quite often are coming in later in tax season, not because their lives are more complicated, but because their lives are more disorganized. And they have finally decided they have to show up now and try to work things out and go with it. It's important to know the Cohen rule because you will have to make use of it. There are going to be times when Cohen is going to be there, or at least there's going to be records that are not as good as you might hope. And you're going to have to decide at what level can you justify a deduction. But it is also important to be very, very aware that Cohen is a last resort. We would prefer to avoid the use of Cohen at all costs. We really don't want to have to be relying upon Cohen unless there's no other alternative. Finally, it is very crucial you make clear to your clients that Cohen is not a planning tool. That for future transactions, the idea is avoid Cohen. Don't get us under this issue. Make sure if we are under Cohen, it is because of something like Hurricane Katrina that puts us into a Cohen-style situation. So we've taken a look. Hopefully your tax season is going well so you don't have an awful lot of Cohen-type situations. But knowing how these things work, I suspect we're going to find they continue to come up and will continue to crop up. Now, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, there have been a couple of new podcasts added at Steve Lineberg's site. So if you're a Lineberg subscriber, go to the podcast link. Just recently, a technology update was posted that will take you into tech tools to be used in estate planning and the like. We're going to see a lot of interesting things, I think, as podcasts grow. And hopefully we'll see more come up among professionals so we can work some more and have some more back and forth on these various issues as they arise. This has been the Tax Update Podcast for Saturday, March the 25th, 2006. Again, please confirm with your own independent research any of the items raised in this podcast. If you have comments on the podcast, you can visit my podcast blog page at ezollers.libsyn.com, and you can post comments there. This is the podcast for Saturday, March the 26th, 2006.